We can promise you a satisfying parts one and two of comment this afternoon. We have a return visit from Mr. Joseph Hain of Lebanon, Pennsylvania, who has done a great deal of research on early radio, largely children's adventure shows, which he's doing under Broadcast Pioneers. And he has brought with him two very fascinating tapes. It's going to take quite a while to run them. We're going to keep talk here to a minimum. And we're going to run a lot of these tapes. Now, these are voices from out of the past, many of which you might have forgotten years ago and will be recalled as we play the tapes. We'll be back now in just a moment. Mr. Hain will be with us on parts one and two of comment. Back in a moment. And we're in part one right now of our comment program. Our guest, Mr. Joseph Hain of Lebanon, Pennsylvania, who has done a great deal of research on the early days of radio, has many thousands of recorded shows, which he has carefully taped. He largely researches on children's adventure shows, but now this is for the so-called broadcast pioneers. Joe, I wonder if you'd explain that first, and then we'll talk about the tape.
Thank you very much, Harry. First, I'd like to say that I've been rather sick all week with the bug and a bad sore throat. I climbed out of bed yesterday and got the tapes together, and I'm very happy to be here, but I must apologize for the condition of my voice. Now, getting to the broadcast pioneers, this organization was originally started back in the early 40s, I think right before World War I, by H.V. Kaltenborn, the great commentator. And it was consisted of the time, and its primary purpose yet is to get together all the old veterans, the 20-year veterans and more, of broadcasting, those in radio, television, any facet of broadcasting in the entertainment media, to get these people together for the purpose of mostly socializing. And also, within the last 10 years, under Bill Hedges, who was a vice president, one of the top men at NBC for many years, he's a pioneer, he started some of the great stations in Chicago. Under Bill, he is getting together all the old memorabilia, including the tapes, books, anything pertaining to broadcasting from its origination in the United States. This is to serve as a reference library for anyone in broadcasting and in industry or any scholarly people who want to do research on broadcasting because of its phenomenal impact on the American scene, on the American economy. Most people do not realize that broadcasting is probably one of the biggest industries in this country today. Its effect through communication is just phenomenal.
That is so true. Now, Joe, let's get into the tapes. Now, do you want to explain title by title the tapes we'll be hearing in the first part? Oh, I have your copy, Joe. I have mine over
here.
Doesn't matter. You take this one.
We have two tapes here, and on tape number two, the first show that I put on here is about a four-minute segment from Jack Armstrong. Now, this, as everyone knows, Jack Armstrong, the All-American Boy. About 3,000 broadcasts, we've managed to track down maybe four or five shows. So you can imagine how difficult it is to track down this material. Now, this came from General Mills, whose library of the Jack Armstrong Show is also very limited. It's from April 1939, and I believe it is the closing program of 1939.
All right, let's hear it.
Play the Piper Hudson High, boy. Show them how we stand. Ever shall our team be champions, known throughout the land.
Wheaties, breakfast of champions, bring you the thrilling transcribed adventures of Jack Armstrong, the All-American Boy.
Your Holiness' permission, we four have brought from America a parchment scroll that we have written to believe is yours. May we present it to you?
Let me quote words with which you are no doubt familiar. Render therefore unto Caesar the things which are Caesar's. And even unto an old, old llama, render that which is his. I am ready to receive your gift.
Go ahead, Jack. Walk straight forward and give it to him.
All right, Uncle Jim.
Sir, I mean nobly born. Uncle Jim and the rest of us feel greatly privileged to have brought back your lost scroll.
Jack, I thank you, and I ask you to take my blessing to your country, my special blessing. Tell the boys and girls of the United States that this world is theirs, and they shall use it as they will. As they are, so shall their world become. If they have hearts of gold, a glorious new golden age awaits us all. If they are brave, they shall find a world full of chivalry. If they are honest, they shall neither fear poverty nor need to beg their bread. All riches are theirs if they are honest. If they are kind to one another, so the kindness overflows like blessed water in a thirsty desert, they shall save the whole world from the malice and the meanness and the war that is tearing its heart. Can you take that message to the boys and girls of the United States?
Yes, sir. I'll be proud to do it.
And now, millions and millions and millions of blessings. Om Mani Padme Hum. Padme Hum. Om Mani Padme Hum.
I go. Step backwards. Don't turn your back to him. Out through the door this way.
Quick.
And now, you must go. The flying fortress is ready. Goodbye, Jim Fairfield. Goodbye, Jack. Billy Betty.
Goodbye, Charlie.
Good luck to you, Charlie, son. Thanks a million for all you've done. And, Charlie, son, if you get a chance, will you please tell the great Grand Lama that I'm going to spend all the rest of my life trying to live that message? Goodbye.
Goodbye, Jack. Listen, I'll make some magic for your journey. Oh, yay, why, yay, you're a fool, my...
We'll reintroduce our guest once again, Joseph Hain of Lebanon, Pennsylvania. We're playing tapes of early radio shows. And, Joe, we have the next one coming up now, number two, and it's uncut.
This is
history.
Little Orphan Annie from November 20th, 1940. There's no opening signature. That is the great Little Orphan Annie theme. This is pretty hard to track down. It runs about 3.5 minutes, and this is probably the greatest of all the kids' shows dating back to 1930, Little Orphan Annie.
Okay.
After that sedan, driver, we're gaining on it.
Yeah, it won't take us long to catch him at this rate.
This is likely to be a long chase, eh? They might be on their way to another town.
Well, that's possible.
How far are we going to follow them?
Well, we can't follow them in New York City or anything like that. We'll keep after them long enough to get their license number anyhow.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Well, can we go past the town limits already? There's the old house up here on the hill.
Yeah. The black sedan is passing it right now.
Yeah. We're close enough to him now, driver.
Hey, just jumping, Jenny. They're not passing the old house. They're slowing down.
Delicious, they are.
They're stopping there.
No, what? Turn into the side road, driver. Quick. Swing around the corner here and stop.
Yes, ma'am.
Boy, that sure took us by surprise.
Yeah, if you liked father, and we wouldn't have had any place to turn off the main road. There, they'd have seen us for sure.
Well, we're all right now, though. This hedge that runs along here will shield the cab from being seen.
Yeah, but it keeps us from seeing, too. Come on, let's get out.
Just let the meter run, driver. We want you to take us back to town.
Okay.
Let's climb up here to the top of the back where we can peek over the hedge.
Yeah, we'll get a good view of the old house from there.
This chase is getting more mysterious by the minute. That woman tries to throw suspicion on the black jacket. Now she and that man are driving right up to what we believe is the black jacket's headquarters.
It sure doesn't make sense. Hey, look. The woman and the man are walking up the path toward the house.
Sure, that's just what they're doing. They're walking right up to the door of the old house and...
they're going right in.
Quick, Gulliver. Backing right in without knocking or anything. Just as though they lived there.
Well, this sure beats me. Maybe that old house isn't the Black Jacket's headquarters after all. But who are the boys Lieutenant Bushmill saw going in there? And who threw the rocks at us when we tried to go into the place?
I don't know any of the answers, Joe. There's certainly something awfully strange going on. Well, I think we've done as much as we can by ourselves.
But what are we doing next?
Call up Chief Bailey. He's been itching to raid that old house. Well, the time has come to do it. And the sooner, the better.
Hey, Annie and Joe had figured that woman to be an enemy of the Black Jackets. And yet she and that man have gone into what we all thought was the Black Jackets' headquarters. What in the world does it mean? And don't forget, here's the way to get your beautiful personal identification tag and chain. Just print the initial you want on your tag and your name and address on a piece of paper. Then send it with a dime wrapped in a metal foil seal from under the lid of a can of the new chocolate-flavored Ovaltine or plain Ovaltine. And send it to Little Orphan Annie, Chicago, Illinois. All straight? Get busy right away. Now, this offer is good in the United States only. Well, Annie is going to call Chief Bailey and tell him to go ahead with his raid on that old house. Tomorrow's adventure is sure to be an exciting one. Now, don't miss it. Until tomorrow, this is Pierre Andre saying goodbye.
Oh, that's Little Orphan Annie. Year 1940. Okay, now go ahead, Joe.
Well, on Little Orphan Annie, you brought out one thing there, the sendaways, the premium offers, which have done phenomenal amount of work just to track them down. I estimate there are at least 5,000 different items for kids to send away for from about 1930 through 1956, and this is unbelievable, but in those days, this is what sold the program. It brought in terrific revenue for the stations and for the sponsors to sponsor more classical, more quality-type programs, too. The next we have coming up, the Aldrich family, one of the most famous. It was number one in the ratings for many years. This is from the middle 40s, and I'm sure everybody will recognize the opening.
All right, go ahead.
And now the Jell-O family presents...
Henry! Henry Aldrich!
Come in, Mother.
Family based on characters originated by Clifford Goldsmith and starring Ezra Stone as Henry with Jackie Telk as Homer.
I'll tell her straight out. Operator, give me Elm 891, please. What should I say to her, Hen?
Oh, just say, look, Agnes, there's nothing personal in this, but I think we're both too young to know our own minds.
Sure, that's good.
And furthermore, Agnes, the whole thing is...
Hen...
Just be firm.
I will, Hen. Hello? Agnes, this is Homer. Agnes, I... What? Oh. Miss Lawson? Oh. Madam? Agnes, I don't know what you mean. Agnes Henry's here. But Agnes...
What's the matter?
She thinks I ought to call her dear.
Oh.
Yes, dear. Yes, dear. Uh-huh, dear. Yes, dear.
Homer?
Yes, dear.
Why didn't you tell her?
Because she... Henry.
What?
What's a fella supposed to get his fiancé for her shower?
What?
A shower. Agnes said Kathleen insisted on giving her one.
Gee, I don't know, Homer. I think you're supposed to give her tablecloths and old pillowcases and things like that.
Yeah, I suppose so.
Homer, why didn't you tell her about being too young to know your own mind?
But she sounded so positive about the whole thing. Boy, I got the feeling maybe it was illegal or something to call it off.
Gee whiz, maybe it is. You know what, Homer? Maybe you just ought to stick it out. Forever, if necessary. She's bound to get tired of you sooner or later.
Isn't an engagement sort of like a contract?
I guess so.
What can they do to you if you don't go through with your end of it?
I don't know.
I don't think my father's going to... My father? Boy, wait till he finds out. Henry, why did you have to glance at rings in the first place?
I didn't know Kathleen was going to be snooping around.
Kathleen, that's the trouble with girls. They talk too much. Next thing you know, it'll be all over school. Henry.
What?
Mr. Bradley will throw me out of school. See, I told you there were advantages to being engaged.
Okay, now that was... The Aldrich family, incidentally, Ezra Stone is a native Pennsylvanian. He presently lives at Newtown, isn't it?
Newtown, Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania, and he's rather large in TV production at the moment. Ezra Stone, a dairy farmer, believe it or not. We're going to be back in just a moment. Our guest in parts one and two of comment, Mr. Joseph Hain of Lebanon, collector of old and very valued tapes of the early days of radio. Back in just a moment. All right, we're in part one right now of our comment program. Joseph Hain of Lebanon is with us in parts one and two. We have a lot of shows of the early days of radio to play for you, so let's go with number four here.
One of the most famous of all time, I Love a Mystery, 1942, written, produced, directed by Carlton E. Morse, the master.
Okay.
The makers of Fleischmann's High Vitamin Yeast present I Love a Mystery. I Love a Mystery, presenting the latest adventure of the three comrades, Jack, Doc, and Reggie, en route to the deadly tropical jungles of French Indochina in search of the ancient and sacred idol, the Cobra God.
Okay, let's do it that way.
How do we get to the station from here?
I don't know.
You don't know?
No, but according to my instructions, there should be a man waiting under that scraggly oak tree over there who can show it.
Well, let's get to going. It's cold and misty. Boss is hot standing around here.
All right, lay off that. Reggie, you stay here with Doc and the Chinese girl. Miss Barkley, you come with me.
Why?
I want to leave two men to guard this girl at all times. You come with me to contact the outpost who's waiting for us.
Certainly.
Come along. You fellas wait here.
Well, hurry up. Is this the tree you meant?
Yep. Yeah. Hold it. Doc, I'm sitting under the tree. Hey there. Last call for the boys in blue.
What's happening?
You'll know. Funny I don't get any answer. Stay here. I'm going under the branches. Yeah. Hey, what's this?
Is the man there?
Yeah, he's here. Hanging by his neck from a...
Explain.
This is the famous Shell Chateau program going all the way back to 1935. That's 32 years ago. Wallace Berry was the host of many of these Shell Chateaus, and here he introduces the young Judy Garland, 12 years old, who sings Broadway with him. This is almost incredible. You must hear it to believe it.
Now for the surprise of the evening. This is really so doggone good that I can hardly believe it myself. This is the opportunity spot of the show. One portion of the show that we donate each week to someone which we feel has exceptional ability and we want to help along. We have a girl here whom I think is going to be the sensation of pictures. She's only 12 years old, and I take great pleasure in presenting to you Judy Garland. Wait until you hear. 12 years old. Come on, Judy. You're Judy. If you're scared, you hang right on to me, honey. I'm right with you. Come on, we'll talk a minute. Now, where did you learn to sing?
My mother taught me.
Your ma, huh? Never had any regular music lessons at all, huh?
Well, I did take some piano lessons.
Well, can you play pretty good?
I don't know. Mom says I play pretty well.
Well, of course, Mom would. All right, Judy, now tell me this. Now, what do you want to do when you grow up to be a great big girl, huh?
I want to be a singer, Mr. Berry. And I'd like to act, too.
Well, you'll do it, Judy. Don't worry. Now, I'll tell you. You just stand here and sing that piece you sang to me the other day and show these folks what a singer you are. Now, go right to it. If you need me, I'll be standing right there. You hear? Step right on it. Go ahead, Judy. I'll be right there.
A million stars. Broadway, street of a million nights. Nights of gaiety and sorrow. Nights that promise a gay tomorrow. But up or down or sad or gay, something in this whole Broadway that makes you tingle in and out, that makes you get right up and shout. God a day, God a day. Broadway is where the stones begin to stop and make everybody dance. Broadway is where the stones begin to stop and make everybody dance. Take me away when that's gone. party. But up to dead, 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 Broadway. Everybody, holy, way, rolling, way, way up the gateway, way in each merry cafe, orchestra's play, taking your breath away with a Broadway rhythm. It's got me. Everybody, sing. What did it do today? What dancing, what dancing, what do you, what do you do? Go to town, go to town, yeah, yeah. Everybody dance.
That's hard to believe. The introduction of Judy Garland to the world, age 12 years, and that voice of Wallace Beery. We're going to be back in just a moment. We have many more tapes to play of the old series here. We're going to hear from Vic and Save, Gunsmoke, Merton Marge, Inner Sanctum, all many of these famous names here. Even Aunt Jenny's real life stories with Lanny Ross will be in the second part, believe it or not. We have a lot to go here, so we'll be back in just a moment. All right, now let's see. We're up to 1941 or 2 here. Our guest, once again, Joseph Hain of Lebanon, broadcast pioneers, talking about early days of radio, and he has many early tapes. Okay, Joe, go ahead.
Vic and Sade coming up. I'd just like to mention we were talking here quite a bit. The quality of these shows, to people who remember radio, the quality of these tapes is really phenomenal when you realize how old they are and how difficult and the conditions that some of these old records were saved. Cellars, attics, warehouses. So Vic and Sade, probably the most famous 15-minute humor show, probably one of the greatest. This man wrote it for 15 years, two shows a day, and he is considered by the people in the business as one of the great geniuses of writing. The quality is just a little bit lower than my best on this particular segment.
They can say, all right.
By George, if I go on at this rate, I'll beat Major Lee.
I am, Ruthie. I said, surely, Ruthie, you bump into each other lots of times. Downtown, grocery store, in the Gambletons and around. She says, yes, we have, many times. I said, well, for goodness sake, why didn't you speak? She says, well, I thought of it, but something always kind of held me back. Guess I was afraid I'd make myself look pushy. And I just said, $9, that's the way Miss Harris felt. Afraid if she spoke, Ruthie might just say no, think she was pushy. Darn the thing you ever heard of?
Mm.
Why, gracious sake, so
I... Everything turn AJ, please.
What's all this now?
Getting a threat. Thank you, sir.
Why, gracious sake, the life, if it'd been me, I'd have walked up to Miss Harris and said, Miss Harris, I'm Ruthie Sambottom, I mean, you know I'm
oh,
Ruthie Sambottom.
Oh, my. Oh, we're just sitting around. Yeah. Say, I'm making lists of speaking acquaintances. I haven't counted them, but there's plenty. Pretty soon I expect to have you be. Oh, is that so? How many added on? What's your grand total? Go on. I guess this is enough of this conversation. So long.
How many?
Huh?
How many speaking acquaintances is nice to get?
2,108,697,483.
Mm.
Ain't that the darndest thing,
About
Duke
in my head?
Ain't that the darndest thing?
Another brief interlude at the small house halfway up in the next block. Thank you.
I'll get as much of the gun smoke in as we can here in part one, Joe. Go ahead.
Okay, gun smoke 1952, and you can tell the difference when you hear this between TV gun smoke and radio. This is really great.
My name's Matt Dillon. I'm Marshall of Dodge.
Hello. I've been wanting to meet you.
Yeah, I've come on business.
I like business. Talk with me.
Well, that's your business, Miss Ramirez.
My name is Evelita. You could call me Eve.
Well, when do you expect your brother?
I don't know what my brother does. He may be home soon. He may be late. I don't know. I've seen you when I've been in town, Matt Dillon.
Yeah?
I don't ride in often. Slade's such a fool. He and my brother don't like me to come to town.
Well, Dodge is rough, Miss Ramirez.
Always he has to protect me. Men are such fools. But Matt Dillon is not so. You wouldn't keep me out of town.
Well, that's not my affair, Miss Ramirez. It'd be for your brother and Tab Slade to say.
Tab Slade thinks we will marry. But we won't. Because I don't love him. I don't love anybody. But I could. Maybe.
And Ms. Ramirez...
Don't you find me attractive?
Well, yes, I'm...
Oh, I don't kiss him.
Well, no, I didn't mean...
No.
Dillon? I've got a gun pointed at the back of your head.
Ben, I want to...
We're going to have to pause right here. We'll have many, many more of these early shows on tape. Our guest once again, Mr. Joseph Hain of Lebanon, Pennsylvania, the broadcast pioneers. We're going to pause right here. CBS Dimension after that, the news. We'll be back with more tapes on part two comment. This is WHP Harrisburg. Comment coming up, and we welcome back Joseph Hain of Lebanon, Pennsylvania, of the broadcast pioneers, who is playing part of an extensive library here of early tapes of radio shows. John? Could we get back to the middle of Gunsmoke again? At the very end there, there's a list of the upcoming radio shows. Take your time. We'll chat till you're ready. Let us know when you're ready. We have quite a few to play here, Joe, and part two of our program. We'll get at it here. You have collected... Incidentally, I was curious as to how you get them, how you get most of the tapes.
Well, this is one of the most difficult procedures, Harry. Most of the time, it is working through people of the broadcast or the Pacific pioneers out on the coast, who contact the original stars who were on these shows, who have saved the discs or private collectors, and then you dub the material off, or in the case of private collect, you usually have to do some old-fashioned type of trading, and this gets pretty complicated. Swapping shows, in other words.
I can imagine that it does. And this segment, we had to leave when we went off the air here. It was the first time that Matt Dillon had been kissed, I believe, on the radio or TV series, as far as that is concerned. That was Joseph Conrad, right?
Bill Conrad, the great actor on Gunsmoke. A very poignant ending here, and also a very interesting announcement on CBS.
Okay, Rome.
Gunsmoke, under the direction of Norman MacDonald, stars William Conrad as Matt Dillon, U.S. Marshal. Special music for tonight's story was composed and conducted by Rex Corey. Featured in our cast were Georgia Ellis, Hi Everback, and Jack Crucian, with Richard Beals and Morrison and Herb Ellis. Harley Bear is Chester, and Howard McNair is Doc. Join us again next week as Matt Dillon, U.S. Marshal, fights to bring law and order out of the wild violence of the West in Gunsmoke. Adventure just begins with Gunsmoke on CBS Radio. Still ahead tonight, Gene Autry, Tarzan, Gangbusters, and Stars in the Air. Yes, listen in for them all on most of these same CBS radio stations. This is Roy Rowan speaking. And remember, for your free convention handbook, Right to Time, CBS Chicago 90, Illinois. This is the CBS Radio Network.
Great soap operas, January 1938. And how many women listening out there can recall Mert and Marge?
The story of Mert and Marge. In our last chapter, an attempt was made to hold up Mert and Marge as they left the theater with Ray Hunt and Jack Arnold, the young, handsome assistant district attorney, after the opening of Hayfield's Pleasure. Margie recognized the voice of the would-be hold-up man as that of her worthless foster brother, Jimmy Minter. A policeman wounded him seriously. Mert and Marge have been summoned to the hospital to identify the bandits. To protect Marge, Mert has called Ray Hunt and asked him to help. He has agreed to use his influence with Jack Arnold. And in just a moment, we'll continue the story of Mert and Marge.
I bought a gun to protect myself if I could.
But it wasn't loaded.
I just bought it at a pawn shop. I was going to get it loaded after I tried.
What's a hold-up, Jimmy?
Yeah. It's a hold-up. I wanted to get enough money to get away if I could. Tonight, anyway, quick. Some guy hit me on the chin and then you see the cop shot.
Yeah.
I guess he'll be up to me now. My first stick-up, Marge. What a rotten job. Say, Marge, I saw you in the show. I was way up in the gallery. You know, I was back to see you, but I missed you. You're the best darn dancer in the whole show. But you're better than the star, Marge.
Oh, thanks, Jimmy.
And Marge, do you suppose there's anything I could ever do or say that would make you forgive me for all the rotten things I've done to you? And for that day I hit you?
Oh, that all forgotten, Jimmy. You weren't yourself that day.
I don't know what got into me, Marge. If I can just get away from the gang, they're afraid I'll squeal, but I won't. I just want to be let alone, Marge. I wonder what I'll get for this job. I didn't shoot, though. Never shot a gun in my life.
Mr. Arnold may get you out of it all right.
You know, Jack Arnold?
Uh-huh.
He's a swell guy. I met him at the Red... a place here in town. Oh, gee, I feel sick. I'm so tired. If I could only get out of this all right. Do you think Mom care if I came home for a little while? Until I feel better. And maybe I could get a job in Syracuse, huh?
Jimmy, Mother'd be so happy if he'd go home and try to do better. I'm going to get $60 a week now, and I'll help you.
After all the dirty things I've done to you. No, Marge. You better let him send me back to jail.
Jimmy, do you know you never kissed me since you were a little boy?
Mm-hmm.
When you used to call me Marge?
Marge. Yeah. Yeah, Marge. Will you kiss me now, Marge?
Oh, Jimmy. How I wanted and wanted a big brother like you.
Gee, Marge. You're a swell sis.
Okay, now, the last one on this tape. Go ahead.
Last one is the most famous of all, Inner Sanctum, and the idea created by Hi Brown, who is now in New York, a big studio, and this is October the 16th, 1945, Inner Sanctum.
Lipton Tea and Lipton Soup present Inner Sanctum Mystery. Sanctum. Welcome through the squeaking door.
Joe?
What?
A couple, they're acting very strange.
They're having an argument.
No. Look what he just took out of his pocket.
Holy mackerel. A gun.
He's pointing the gun at her. Joe! He shot her. He was saying...
can't see. It must be a gag of some kind.
She seems to have a flash when he fired the gun. And see how still she lies. Her body crumbled at his feet.
Yeah. He's picking her up. I bet he's going to throw her in the...
No, don't let him! Oh.
Actually, you push my hand down on the horn, he sees her.
He's coming across the bridge.
Heading for us.
What?
He knows we witnessed the murder. He's got to kill us.
Quick, get the car.
Stay here before I can turn the car around.
Then what do we do?
Oh, we'll duck into the woods. Come on. Quick. Let's run.
My high heels. I can't run
you
fast.
You've got to. Careful, these bushes. Get behind this tree.
He's getting off his car. Jordan has the gun. He needs to kill us.
He's coming straight to this tree. He knows we're here. And as we've got to run for our lives. Here, take my hand. Come on.
He's shooting at us.
Run, Edson. Faster. Faster.
Famous Inner Sanctum from 1945. Joseph Hain is here, broadcast pioneers, early tapes of radio shows. We have another group of another tape here. Okay, Joe, we're at the top again.
Back to tape number three. Number one on this list is a very famous horror show from the late 40s and early 50s, The Mysterious Traveler with Maurice Tarplin in the lead role, November the 6th, 1951.
Broadcasting System presents The Mysterious Traveler, written, produced, and directed by Robert A. Arthur and David Copeland, and starring two of radio's foremost personalities, Lyle Sugro and Robert Diamond, in Behind the Locked Door. This is The Mysterious Traveler inviting you to join me on another journey into the realm of the strange and the terrifying. I hope you will enjoy the trip, and it will thrill you a little and chill you a little. So settle back, get a good grip on your nerves, and be comfortable, if you can, as I bring you the strange and chilling story so many of you have asked to hear again. I call it Behind the Locked Door.
Darling, you're delirious, mule. You need a doctor.
I wish it were simple as all that.
You're feverish. You need care.
Go away, Kathy. Go away.
How can I? Leaving you alone like this?
Don't you understand? I'm not alone. She's here.
She's here?
Yes. Didn't I tell you? Turned out to be a she.
Out of your mind, you don't know what you're saying.
I first saw her that first time. Lying unconscious on that sandbar, my first instinct was to leave her there, but how could I? She saved my life in the cavern and then jumped into the river when she thought I was drowning, even though she couldn't swim herself.
Martin, I want you to get a grip on yourself, sir.
As I was dependent on her in the dark. She's dependent on me in the light. She's blind. She can't speak, yet she...
Stop talking.
You can't believe it's true, can you, Kathy? Neither could I at first.
What are you staring at?
Huh?
Is there anyone in that bedroom? Well, I'll soon find out. Why is the door locked?
She's... in there.
Martin, you're sick. You don't know what you're saying. I'll prove to you there's no one in that room. It's just your imagination. Give me the key to the door.
Kathy, go
away. Give this to me. Thank you. Perhaps when you see the room is empty, you'll be willing to return to town for medical treatment. There. I told you.
A thriller. Okay, we're going to be back in just a moment. Now we're going to pause right here. We've had with us Joseph Hain, both in parts one and two of our program. We have a lot more to go, a lot more good tapes to play for you. So we'll be back now in just a moment.
All right, Joe, now we're up to Hop Harrigan here.
Another great aviation thriller from the middle 40s. There were dozens of these kid thrillers.
Presenting Hop Harrigan, America's ace of the airways.
CX-4 calling control tower. CX-4 calling control tower. Standing by.
Control tower, back to CX-4. Wind southeast, ceiling 1200. All clear.
Okay, this is Hop Harrigan coming in.
Yes, it's America's ace of the airways. Coming in for another transcribed episode in the adventures of Hop Harrigan.
And now to our story. With the startling revelation that Bill King was the man who whistled and who had caused the temporary disappearance of Tank Tinker, the mystery of the vanishing men came to an abrupt and surprising end. As we continue now, it is early the following morning. Hop and Tank, resuming active operation of their airport at Lakeville, are flying a cargo run to New City. With only a moderate load in the beach craft, gales come along, and as they skim through the clear morning air, they discuss the events of the preceding week.
He's so far away now, Hop. It looks like a bad dream.
Not to me, it don't.
Hey, how do you feel, Tank? Your head still bother you?
The wallops I got are still kind of sore, but that's all.
You should have stayed in the hospital longer.
Oh, now you're talking like a nurse. This is doing me a lot more good. Besides, fixing Bill King's wagon was the best medicine in the world.
You certainly timed it beautifully. I'll never forget his face when he saw you standing in the hall.
Oh, that was all Hop's idea. He called up the hospital and squared it with the sawbones to let me go.
Hop, I still don't know how you figured it all out so fast.
Well, that phone call from the FBI put me straight. And they told me that there'd been no disappearances around the country. They gave me a whole new angle to work on. If Bill's original story was alive, well, then everything else would have to be alive, too. And the pieces began to fit perfectly.
He must have been insane to think he could get away with it.
Oh, well, he's always been a hotshot idea man. And when Continental fired him and he couldn't get another job, something must have snapped upstairs. He just couldn't take it.
I still wish you'd have let me punk him once.
Now, listen, Zach, the mood you were in, there wouldn't have been anything left to take to the police.
So what? Save him a lot of dough and trouble.
I suppose he'll be examined by a state psychiatrist and then committed to an institution.
You know, we should have known he had a screw loose the way he started with that black hand routine.
Well, now that it's all wrapped up, let's forget it.
Easier said than done.
Hey, Gail, how about going out with me tonight? We can visit the carnival and see the fun house.
Oh, Harrigan, I never want to see another fun house as long as I live.
Well, heads up, there's New City. Stand by for landing, Tank, while I call the tower.
Check.
New City Tower from Beechcraft, NC82043. Come in. Over.
Beechcraft, NC82043 from tower. Go ahead. Over.
Approaching field from southwest, 3 miles, altitude 2,000 feet. Request landing instructions.
All right, we're in part two right now of our program. Joe Haynes is with us. Now, we have a classic coming up here, Joe. Go ahead.
Right, on Jenny's Real Life Stories with a very special guest, Lanny Ross. And as we had just started out there, you hear the great Lanny Ross. He had his own show for many years singing.
Thank you.
that was a peach of a story. Romance, songs, and everything.
Yeah, and wasn't Lanny great?
Say, he sure was. Well, now then, what's coming up tomorrow?
Well, it's a story about two sisters, Danny. Martha Kimberly and her willful, restless younger sister, Bet.
Oh, sure. Say, Aunt Jenny, everyone who has a teenage girl or knows one will be plenty interested in that story. It's power-packed. So, folks, be listening tomorrow, sure, for Aunt Jenny's thrilling story about the Kimberly girls.
Okay, go ahead.
We now have just a little glimpse of our very famous program called Favorite Story with the wonderful voice of Ronald Coleman. Just less than 2 minutes on this.
This is Ronald Coleman, inviting you to radio's most dramatic half hour, Favorite Story.
Life when he lifts his eyes and his heart to the distant horizon. At rare moments, he may even glimpse the eternal, but more often, he'll dream of enchanted journeys. We're all of us wanderers and travelers on the face of the earth, and if some of us never have the golden opportunity of visiting Far Cathay and old Baghdad, the secret mountains of Tibet, or the courts of the ancient rulers of China, still we can close our eyes and dream. Our favorite story for this week is about the most wondrous journey in all history, the travels of Marco Polo, the chosen by the great actress Miss Eva Le Gallienne. We're going to travel back in time now, half a dozen centuries, for the story of Marco Polo.
We're going to pause here for a couple of commercials and be right back. This is part two, comments. Our guest once again, Mr. Joseph Hayne of Lebanon, Pennsylvania, and the broadcast pioneers. More tapes in a moment. Now we're back in business. What do we have next here?
Number five coming up, Superman, March the 2nd, 1945. Probably one of the most famous segments because it features the one and only Batman.
Oh, boy. Let's hear this one.
I want to have a look through those windows.
But it's too dark to see anything.
Well, I can see pretty well in the dark. The street lamp behind us throws a little light. All right, hold up now. Just a lot of life-size wax figures standing around the floor.
Yeah, I can see them. They're all dressed up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they look kind of weird in the dark, don't they?
Yeah. That's funny.
What, Mr. Kent?
Those wax figures, there's something familiar about the faces, but I can't quite place them.
I can't either. Oh, gosh, look.
What, Dick?
Over to the left, against the wall.
What?
It's Batman.
Batman?
Yeah, look. It's Batman.
Yes, I see. Only he's a wax statue.
Startled, Clark Kent's eyes followed Dick Grayson's trembling finger to the silent, life-sized figure of the missing Batman. What can this mean?
Fellows and girls, there's a startling surprise in store for you. And for Superman on Monday. So don't miss it. Tune in, same time, same station, for another exciting episode in The Adventures of Superman.
Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane. It's Superman.
Fellows and girls, be sure to follow the adventures of Superman. Brought to you every day, Monday through Friday, same time, same station, by the makers of that super delicious cereal, Kellogg's Pep. Superman is a copyrighted feature appearing in Superman DC Publications.
Okay, that's a classic.
A real classic, Harry.
Now the next one.
This Life is Mine, a very famous soap opera on just during the war years. This is September the 21st, 1943. Those who lived through the war will have poignant memories from this little episode, and at the end, Kate Smith will come in with a very special message on CBS.
Columbia Broadcasting System presents This Life is Mine, written by Eddie Richman and Lynn Stone. The story of a family which meets the challenge of this changing world with two conflicting points of view.
That while our military prosecutes the war, your government acts as a purchasing agent to supply the military with the materials of war. We civilians must assume the responsibility of loaning the government the money it must have to buy the equipment our soldiers must have. Well, I ask this again. What is the value of a human life? $100 bond? $500 bond? $1,000 bond? Do you care to set the price? You can't estimate it in dollars and cents. And yet equipment, the best kind that's being made today, is the only way we have of saving the lives of American soldiers. You can make the purchase of equipment possible by your purchase of war bonds. Men are offering their lives for eternity. All I'm asking of you is your dollars for 10 years. And then you'll get back four for every three.
Betty Winkler stars in the role of Eden Channing. Tony Marvin speaking. This Life is Mine is directed by Richard Sandville. And now, CBS presents Kate Smith.
Hello, everybody. This is Kate Smith again. There's just one story I'd like to tell you now, although I'll have many more to tell you before the day is over. But right now, I'd like to tell you what a man said at a war bond rally up in Utica, New York. The quota they set out to raise in Utica was $15 million. And they had a meeting and lots of enthusiastic speakers. Then one man got up to talk, and this is what he said. You know, friends, when we buy war bonds, we're not buying tanks and guns and planes. What we're really doing is buying our boys back. Bringing them home to us, safe and sound again. Now, I know there isn't a person listening to me who wouldn't give everything he has to buy his boy back. Why, you'd give the whole $15 million yourself to buy your boy back if you had it, wouldn't you? I know I would. I'd be glad to. I'd give anything, all my money, or my health, or my own life, to buy my boy back from war. But I'm afraid I can't do it. Not anymore. You see, I just received a telegram from Washington this morning. My boy isn't coming back. Be on the air as long as my voice holds out with many more stories. But for now, won't you buy a bond?
This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Okay. Here's one we've been working for many, many years. We finally, about 2 months ago, in an old Tennessee radio station, found the shadow of Fu Manchu, Sax Rohmer's famous, famous character, 1940s.
The shadow of Fu Manchu. Based on the stories by Sax Rohmer.
Thank you. appear to have come from this house. So don't cross the road directly. I'll walk there and cross. You go below. Out of the light of the street lamp. Cross then and run for those elms.
I wonder what that glow could be.
Sailors met the death designed for me, Petrie. See, and Bill, even his walk, he resembled me.
Great Scott. I told him that not 5 minutes ago.
Here, turn him over on his back. I'll look him over. I'll hold the flash.
Good heaven. Look at his face.
Yes, those wounds, irregular. In small clusters. As if made by the claws of a bird.
Horrible deep scratches. Like tattoo marks. The injured surface is bloated. It's poison, Nayland.
Well, Joe, we certainly appreciate you coming up and sharing these old memories with us and these fine old tapes that you have. Our guest on parts one and two of comments this afternoon, Mr. Joseph Hain of Lebanon, Pennsylvania, who has been collecting for some time now the famous early tapes of the early golden days of radio, when radio was considered the theater of the mind.